Welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. How is everyone doing? I hope you guys are doing well. I have a wonderful guest today. I have Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. on my show, a best-selling author. He's a Nagual, a Toltec master of transformation. It's been a family affair on my show. It was wonderful interviewing his father in April and his brother last week, and I'm very excited to speak with him today, and he's going to join me in just a few minutes. Each week, for those of you who do listen to my show on a regular basis know, I share a magic money message. It's an image of a manifesting postcard or photograph that I take with an affirmation that I like to focus on for that week. I post them on Mondays, hence Magic Monday message. And this week's affirmation is I spread joy. And let me tell you, this week has not been joyful. If you were listening to my show last week when I had Don Jose Ruiz on, my guest brother, my sister, it must be sibling energy or something, my sister was rushed to the hospital that day. Well, here we are a week later, and she is still in the ICU. She is stable but critical. She had a choking accident last week, and my sister is special needs. Her vitals look good, so please continue to pray for her and my family. This week's affirmation, I spread joy, has been a challenge, as you can imagine. The scared and angry side of me doesn't want to spread joy. I want to yell at the unfairness of it all. Mm-hmm. Our whole lives with my sister, Toni, has been a challenge and a struggle. And nothing with her has ever been easy, and we have been many times in crisis mode with her. And she's so innocent and sweet, and no, it's not fair. What is happening? I could easily lash out at others. I could take my pain out on them, but I'm being very conscious not to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not anyone else's fault what happened, and to take it out on strangers or loved ones isn't fair to them. And sometimes it takes a real conscious effort to be aware of how we're showing up in the world. So this week, I'm focusing on the affirmation, I spread joy, and I am doing my best right now, as I know we all are all the time. And if you want to see what I'm talking about in my Magic Money Message postcards with their affirmations, please go to my website. I share them each week or on any of my social media platforms. I'm always posting them. I love making them. I have so much fun doing it. And if you're interested in doing some inner work exercises and reading people's incredible journeys of transformation, inspiration, and manifesting, please check out my book, Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams, which you can find on your favorite bookstore online, of course, or go to the bookstore, right? I miss going to bookstores. Next week, I have returning guest, Reverend Gregory Possman, a psychic trance channel on. Gregory channels over 40 light beings, including archangels, as well as master teachers, and he's going to be live channeling on the show. It's always a treat when Gregory joins me. I love it, so you don't want to miss it. But to get to my amazing guest today, I'm so excited to speak with him. Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. is a Nagual, I hope I pronounced that correctly, a Toltec master. Oh, good. A Toltec master of transformation. He's a direct descendant of the Toltecs of the Eagle Knight lineage and is the son of Don Miguel Ruiz. By combining the wisdom of his family's traditions with the knowledge gained from his own personal journey, he now helps others realize their own path to personal freedom. Along with his family, Don Miguel Jr. leads workshops, retreats, and power journeys to help others achieve their own personal freedom and optimal physical and spiritual health. He is also the author of the books, The Five Levels of Attachment, Living a Life of Awareness, The Mastery of Self, A Toltec Guide to Personal Freedom, and has co-authored The Seven Secrets to Healthy, Happy Relationships with Heather Ash Amara. If you want to find out more about him, you can go to miguelruizjr.com. Welcome, Don Miguel. Thank you so much for being here with me today. How are you doing?
Hi, Melissa. I'm doing good. Thank you so much. How are you doing? How are you feeling? You okay?
I'm doing okay. I really, you know, I'm really glad I have the shows. You know, I needed something to ground me, and it's really helped because it's been a tough week, as you can imagine. Yeah, so it hasn't been easy. But so I'm so glad to talk to you. So I'm reading, I'm almost finished with The Mastery of Self, which I absolutely love. So explain from your perspective, what is the Toltec tradition to you? And what does it mean to be a direct descendant of the Eagle Knight lineage?
Sure. Well, to me, a Toltec, the word is a Nahuatl word, which is a Mesoamerican word that in English means artist. If I translate the phrase, the Toltec art of transformation, into 100% English, it means the artist's path of transformation. I am an artist, and the canvas for my work of art is my life. And the instruments I'm going to use to create that work of art is going to be my body, my mind, my will, my intent, my yes and my no, and my perception with it, my engagement with it. I can create the most perfect nightmare or the most harmonious dream. And every choice that I make turns and goes between the two, continuously morphing with every choice, with every consequence, with every action and reaction. I'm always constantly engaging. And like I said before, sometimes it's a nightmare. Sometimes it's very rough, and sometimes it's good. And to me, to be the master of self is the moment where I stop pretending to be something I am not, and accept myself for who I am, you know. And to put it into practice, someone asked me once if the mastery of self means that you're happy for the rest of your life. And I said, no, life will always throw a curveball at us. You know, so if you want to make God laugh, tell her your plans. And it always changes. So when life is good, we apply everything that we've learned to enjoy it. When life is tough, we apply everything we've learned to move the story forward, to heal ourselves, to give us that moment, you know, to acknowledge ourselves, to honor ourselves. This is how I feel. This is how I'm engaging right now. You know, to me, to be the mastery of self is to no longer pretend to be something I am not and accept myself for who I am. In regards to the Eagle lineage, it's my great-great-grandfather, Don Ezequiel Macias, who said it. And it represents that warrior within us that engages our own journey within ourselves to let go of conditional love and our conditioned and domesticated point of views, of letting go of domestication of conditional love and healing our wounds that we cause from that. So it's Don Ezequiel Macias was born in the 1820s in Mexico. He's the first generation Mexican because his parents were born in the New Spain, and they addressed themselves as subject to the king. His son, Don Leonardo, was born in 1882-83, and he rebelled against the tradition in his own unique way. Don Ezequiel was the classical shaman, you know, with a big hat and the trickster, that image. Don Leonardo, his son, was a soldier and a musician, so he incorporated discipline and music, and he taught the Toltec tradition through music. His daughter, Madre Sarita, who was born in 1910, she practiced the Toltec tradition through healing, faith healing. She also rebelled against the tradition, but she had a moment in her life that after having some illness and she had healing, she was so grateful for that healing that she decided to give with generosity and help heal others in her journey. And it is she who decided to share the tradition outside the family and share with the whole community. So you can say that she is the one whose foots I'm following, not my dad's. It's her. And she opened up a little temple in San Diego, California, where she taught to the whole community, and she was inducted into the San Diego Women's Hall of Fame in 2007 for the work she did and maintaining that traditional life. Her son, Don Miguel Ruiz, who is the 13th child, was born in 1952, and he also rebelled against the tradition. He became a medical doctor and Western medicine. He had a moment where he couldn't explain it, so he went back to the tradition and let go of being a doctor and taught this tradition. He continued what my grandmother had decided to do, where she taught to the community in San Diego, but my father continued to branch outside of it. He decided to clean up the tradition and let go of the superstition that surrounded it and put it into words that he called common sense. And that's where the Four Agreements comes in. It's a book written from a common sense point of view, from my dad's point of view, obviously, of course, to him, common sense to him. And it's a way that he let go of that superstition and put it in a word that we can all understand. And that's where my brother and I come in. We were, our apprenticeship came during that time where my father was processing this tradition. So each tradition taught it, each generation taught the tradition in their own unique way. Like, to paraphrase my grandmother, Sarita, if you practice the tradition the way I or your father practice it, you're killing the tradition. You're just repeating it. Put the lessons into life, and life will teach you through the consequences of applying those lessons. And that's why it's unique to all of us. You know, none of us were a carbon copy of one another. Every single one through that generation did it in their own unique way. And I would say, I don't seek his parents' names, but I don't know it. So you can say that's as far as I know. And like my brother likes to say, I was born in 1975. Anything before that, it's a story that I don't know, happened or not.
Well, I love that you said that you use your life as art. And that's something that I am doing as I've gotten older, you know, because I've always been an artist. I studied as an artist, traditional artist. Photography is my favorite kind of art, expressing myself. But as I've gotten older and I've started writing and the radio show and the people that I'm meeting, I'm realizing it's my life that is becoming my art, not just my photography. Which feeds me. My creative side is which feeds my soul and makes me happy and brings me joy.
Yes, I concur with that, because I majored in film and video production, and I did that kind of classical art as well, photography and cinematography, and I worked in the film industry for all these years. And then I changed when I was 28. I asked myself, what do I want my 30s to look like? Mm-hmm. And that's when I shifted. I let go of practicing and working in the film industry. And I engaged here because all of a sudden it was an art form that I'm able to impact. And to me, that's how I see this. I teach people how to heal from the wounds of conditional love left in their heart. And from that point of view, seeing it, okay, this is the clay we get to work with. What do I create with this? You know, this is point A. Why do I want to go from here? You know, it's accepting this is the experience I'm having right now, but I can create, I can move the story forward. How do I want to direct it? How do I want to change it? At that point, it's not about blame or this happened here, this happened there, this is the circumstance. No, this is what I have to work with. What can I create with this? You know, with my son and my daughter, I have two kids. My son has autism. And he's 16 years old, and we're approaching, you know, the transition age into adulthood, and we're going through the last stages of puberty, which, you know, brings the challenges all unto itself. I can spend my whole time here blaming, you know, why did this happen to us? But in reality, it's like, all right, this is what we have. What can we create? And my son, just like my daughter, who's 13 years old, going on 14, and she's teaching me what it is to raise a teenage girl. And that's, you know, they're the greatest teachers I have, of not taking things personal because they're ruthless.
Yes, I know. I know. I know they are. Especially those preteens, boy. They're ruthless, those preteens.
Exactly. But that's the thing. It's like, this is how can I engage them? And I can't help but they're constantly putting a mirror onto me. You know, with my son's journey through autism and attention deficit disorder and anxiety and Tourette's, you know, all these stuff, it's him who's going through the journey. And my job is to help him get through that, to teach them how to use the tools. It's up to him whether he sees those things as this parasite or an ally. You know, it's up to him. But it is the thing that teaches me not only compassion and unconditional love, but it's this journey that it's this constant choice. What do I want to do with this? What do I want to create with this? You know, it's tough. It's not easy. Especially when everything shifts in a blink of an eye. But it's a moment to learn and see, all right, how can I best help him and serve him and give him the space for him to learn how to live his life. You know, as a parent, you know, we have no idea what we're doing. We're doing it the best we've got. We've been playing it by ear, because as soon as they turn one and they turn two, everything we learn about being a parent of a one-year-old goes out the window. We have to relearn how to be a parent to a two-year-old, then they turn four. Well, okay. It almost seems like with every birthday, we have to relearn how to be a parent, which means the work of art that we spend our time creating gets erased because the person we're erasing has changed. And now we have to adapt again and again and again. So you can say it's like we're recreating this work of art, and we can allow it to become a nightmare, or we can find that work that allows us to find the healing. And ultimately, we can't give what we do not have, which means that how I raise them is how I take care of myself.
Right.
And realizing that the best way to be at service is to first to take care of this body, because if this body is tired and full of anxiety, then I'm no help to anyone. I'm just adding fuel to the fire.
Right.
But if I heal it, if I take care of it, and part of that healing and nurturing is accepting this is how I feel, not suppressing my emotion, but acknowledging this is how I feel, then I have the choice. What do I want to do with this emotion? How do I want to let it out? How do I want it to be manifested in my relationship with my son, with my daughter, with my wife, with myself? And that's where the work of art comes in. I can create the most perfect nightmare and just continue on in that, or I can change it. And there it is. So we're always playing it by ear.
I love that. And we're really going to get into the mastery of the self. And before, we're going to take our break here in just a second. But I wanted to say, I have a special needs sister, very close with my family, like you are with your family. And then when my nephew was born and we realized he was on the spectrum, we're like, really? Why is this happening? And somebody said to us as a family, you know, he said, why is this happening? And they said, well, who better for it to happen to? This family, for this child to come through. And it changed, it shifted everything. So it's the same. Who better for this than you, for your son, for you, and your family. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take our first break right now, and then we'll come back in 2 minutes and we'll get into the mastery of the self. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives. Welcome back. I have best-selling author Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. on my show, and I'm reading your book right now, The Mastery of Self, loving it. Is it really possible to master ourselves? Is this we keep doing this at lifetime after lifetime? Can we at least get close in one lifetime?
Well, sure. Well, in this point of view, it's about repetition. Practice makes the master. You put it into practice. For example, in the example of what mastery is, like sometimes we associate mastery as imposing our will to something or be able to dominate something, right? The way I'm postulating or presenting mastery in this form is practice. For example, in 2012, 2013, after I recovered from an injury where I twisted both my ankles and I had to relearn how to walk, my friend and I went for a run and I could barely run 2 miles, but I wanted to run and I enjoyed it. So what I did was I created a playlist where I would walk one song, run one song, walk one song, run one song. And that's how I did a cycle for an hour or so. So when I first started, I could barely run 2 miles. So I started this little path of the cycle of walk, run, walk one. And then little by little, I was able to walk one song, run two songs, walk one song, run two. Then it became three, four, five. And then it became, I was able to run the whole hour. So since that afternoon, when I went for a 2 mile run that I could barely, I can't even say I ran 2 miles. I walked a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Since then, in 2021, I've ran 6 full marathons and run 25 half marathons.
Oh, wow.
And I'm training for my next one. So in this case, I've mastered my running skills in the sense that now I run and I don't even listen to music. At one point, I stopped taking my iPhone, my headphones with me because I didn't like the feeling of the pain of after an hour and a half. And I was training for my first marathon and I didn't want to run with holding a bottle of water and my headphone on my hand, because that's what happens when after my ears hurt, I'm carrying it all. So I stopped running with that playlist, and it was like going from automatic to a driving stick. You know, all of a sudden my body is dictating the pace, and I became a master of the pace of my own body as opposed to letting the music dictate the pace that I was running in. My body ran at its own pace and I listened to my body. And yeah, I ran those 6 marathons without any music. In fact, I haven't run with music in years. Wow. So you can say little by little, with the more practice we put to something, we get better and better. And I still remember on the first day, the first time that I was able to run 5 miles, because for me at that point, I've never run 5 miles. Like, 3 miles was a lot. 5.
Yeah.
So I remember that day where I crossed that threshold and I proved myself out wrong. I can. Mm-hmm. I crossed a threshold that my mind said I couldn't cross, and I crossed it and it felt great. And the best question in my life came in, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. And the best answer, anything. Because now I know how to do it. It's like it was the willingness to start. You can almost say, in order to master anything, it is the willingness to start. You know, if I quote Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, don't be afraid to, I'm not sure if I can say this on the radio, but to be terrible. You know,
You can say it. Yeah, I know.
Don't be afraid to suck, you know. Start somewhere, you know.
Start somewhere.
And practice little by little, you get better and better and better to you become great. You know, the greatest teachers of this is the Beatles, you know, like, they started out just covering songs, and little by little, they just got better and better and better to the point where they started writing songs. And I just saw an interview where Paul McCartney says the reason why they started writing their own songs is because they didn't want to play the songs that other bands were playing. If they want to be unique, they had to come up with songs that the other bands weren't playing, and that's what forced them to write their own songs, and they got really good, and they got better and better. Their progression is incredible. You know, that's an example of what we can do. So, you know, if you want to be a painter, if you want to be a photographer, a parent, be willing to admit at the very first, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to take that step. I'm willing to be terrible. You know, when I first started teaching, I had 0 people go to my class. You know, it's like the name Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. doesn't really bring people to the audience. It might give you a chance. It might give you an opening, but it's up to you whether or not they will come back and listen to you, you know, or engage. So if I was follow through for all these years, it got to the point where when I first started, I ran out of things to say in 15 minutes. Now I've done a week long workshop and I've run out of things. I ran out of time because I still had so much more to share, but I ran out of time in that 5-day workshop. I ran out of time.
Wow.
You know, I still had more to cover.
Yeah.
So you can say from that point of view, I'm the mastery of self is being able to develop that discipline or to follow through. It's like a teacher once shared this with me. The key to enlightenment is effort. That's it. That's what she said. The key enlightenment is effort. Effort,
so putting in the effort.
Is using... Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Effort is using the energy that animates this body, that animates this mind to manifest something. That's what effort is. It's putting one foot forward. Discipline is remembering to apply that effort every day. That's it. That's all. Forget about the drill sergeant in your head. It's remembering to apply that effort every day. That's it. And success is simply following through. So from this point, like I use the analogy of running. It's like if I want to domesticate myself with running, then I'll say, in order to be a runner, I have to qualify for Boston. And only till then will I call myself a runner. Until then, I'm just a jogger. And I know people in the running community that, you know, they diss each other by calling each other joggers, you know. I'm just a jogger. Well, I can domesticate myself, and I said, I'm only going to be a runner once I qualify for Boston. And the day you do, now you up the challenge. Now I have to really do a great performance, and I have to beat my time, my qualifying time, and do my very best, because it's really hard to accept yourself when you achieve things, because I'm so used to, that's the thing about domestication. My future, my success, my love is always if I'm chasing the elusive carrot. And if I ever catch it, then I have to quickly get rid of it, because then I'll lose my motivator. And how am I going to find this? We don't accept ourselves. So we just keep upping it up.
I'm glad you said that about domestication, because you talk about domestication. And what do you mean when you say we adopt the ideals of the planet and become domesticated, and that we also self-domesticate? Like, what does that mean? Because people may be hearing you going, what does he mean, domesticate? So I'll let you explain it.
Sure. Well, the main problem that the four agreements and our whole tradition, every single book deals with, is domestication, a system of reward and punishment by which we model the behavior of an individual, where if we live up to the expectation, we're worthy of a reward. And if we don't live up to the expectation, we're worthy of the punishment. And since we are emotional beings, we experience the full spectrum of our emotions. That reward feels like acceptance, which feels like love. And the punishment feels like rejection and the lack thereof of love, is the way I learned to love myself conditionally. I love myself if I live up to an expectation. For example, hello, my name is Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. I don't take things personal. I don't make assumptions. I always do my best. I forgot the fourth agreement. Oh, no. How can I call myself Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. if I don't know the fourth agreement? And there's that diatribe of judgment, punishing myself for not living up to that image of perfection. Now, mind you, perfection is something that is completely free of any flaw. And I'll corrupt that and say, in order to be worthy of love, I have to be perfect. So in this case, I'm using the four agreements as an instrument of domestication, where I can only be worthy of calling myself Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. if I constantly live up to the four agreements. And in this case, I forgot, oh no, how can I call myself Don Miguel Ruiz Jr.? And there's a diatribe of punishment, of judgment, which I reject myself. And that's where I begin to corrupt the four agreements. If you ever judge yourself for taking things personal, if you ever judge yourself for making assumptions and the rest of it, welcome to the club, where we've turned the four agreements into the four conditions of our personal freedom. It's the way we corrupt the Toltec tradition. And if we can understand how we did that, we can corrupt Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Jesus, Buddha, Siddhartha, Muhammad, psychology, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we even the word special needs and all kind of thing. We can corrupt all of it. I have to live up to this image. I have to be there. But all it is domestication, conditional love. And I can't give what I do not have. So imagine my wife standing right here. Honey, you're Mrs. Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. Here's the four agreements. Read it. Honey, you're taking things personally. You didn't read the book. Oh, honey, how embarrassing. You're making assumptions. I only hang out with people who are impeccable with their own word. At that moment, I'm punishing her for agreements she never made, but I'm forcing her to make the agreement through the judgment. That's what we do when we judge each other. And you can say that's the dream of the planet, where we domesticate each other, trying to make everyone fit an image of what we think they should be, and punishing them when they don't live up to it. And even if they do live up to it, we never really see who they are, because that's the consequence of conditional love. Conditional love only sees what it wants to see, but it never sees the person, the human being that is there. So for me, that's what domestication is. So to be the master yourself is the moment where I practice letting go of that domestication, of no longer corrupting, of no longer using the four agreements as the four conditions. It's like saying, to be worthy of love, I have to be 27 years old, weigh 170 pounds, and have hair like my brother Jose. And if you ever see Jose's hair,
I've seen his hair. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. But if I look at myself in the mirror, that's just not the truth. I'm 45 right. years old. I weigh 191 pounds, and I'm definitely balding. Because I don't live up to that image of perfection, I'm castigating myself. You fat right. beep. You bald right. fat bleep. You old right. bald fat bleep.
Right.
If you ever feel that sting of judgment when you look at yourself in the mirror, that sting is exactly domestication. We're punishing mm-hmm. ourselves for not living up to an image that doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist. So how can we love ourselves unconditionally? Why is it so hard for us to do? And in your book, I love that you talk about there's two voices in our head. One is the parasite mm-hmm. and one is the ally. Mm-hmm. So, yep. so when, and it switches back and forth, right? I mean, we prefer yep. the ally, but the ally is still not our authentic self. Mm-hmm. It's just the voice in our head.
You can put it right. this way. My father describes the individual dream as a relationship between me and me. And he puts it this way. Miguel, mm-hmm. if you're the voice that's talking inside your mind when you're thinking, who's listening? I answered, I am listening. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You're the one listening. And who's talking inside your own mind when you're thinking? And I said, I am. And there it is. You can say it's a relationship between my mind and my heart, or left hemisphere, right hemisphere. Whatever it mm-hmm. is, it's that internal dialogue. Mm-hmm. The main function of the mind is to dream, which is to perceive and to project, you know, and at the root of every belief I have in my belief system, there's a yes that gives it power. There's nothing in my mind that I said no to because I'm not giving it power. So mm-hmm. my mind becomes the parasite when my mind continues to believe all the conditioning, all the domesticated beliefs. You know, I used it in the book, I used the example of my grandma getting me to eat the soup by saying mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. a sin to waste food,
right?
And at that moment I subjugated my will and says, yes grandma, I'll eat the soup. And mm-hmm. before I was saying no, I don't want the soup. And at first mm-hmm. she wanted to nurture me, of course, and that was her intention, but I said no right. enough times that at one point it stopped being about nutrition and it started being about control. She wanted that yes, so she crossed that line of respect. And ever so innocently said, it's a sin to waste food.
Right.
And as a Mexican Catholic boy, I was growing up like that. That was a big thing. So I didn't want to look like a sinner in front of my grandmother's eyes, especially or our selfish kids. So I said, yes. So ever so innocently, she got me to change that no into a yes. I subjugated my will. Mm-hmm. But you have to be careful what you tell an 8-year-old, because fast forward 30 somewhat years later, and I'm at a Mexican restaurant, and they give me a plate this big of food. at least they call it Mexican yeah. food. And right. halfway through of eating it, my body tells me the truth.
I'm full.
I'm full, yes.
But
consciously
or
subconsciously
right.
here, it's a sin to waste food.
To waste food, right.
And consciously or subconsciously, I say, yes, grandma. And I continue to eat, and I finish the whole plate. And I'm so full, you're going to have to roll me out. But in that moment of clarity where my body told me the truth, that I am full, that I am nurtured, there was a belief, conscious or subconscious, that overruled my mm-hmm. will. And I subjugated myself and I went against myself.
Right.
And now I'm suffering, I'm not feeling good, and whatever health consequences mm-hmm. come from overeating, that's what I'm experiencing. And here's the thing, my grandmother is nowhere around. In fact, my grandmother passed away 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We
yeah.
humans are the only.
I know. Sorry. I love it. Go ahead. Don't say it.
Oh, yeah. We humans are the only beings that are able to self-domesticate as far as we know. You know, because my grandmother only said that to me once when I was 8 years old, but I've been repeating it to myself in her voice for 30 somewhat years, which means
right.
my mind has reaffirmed and continued to believe that condition, and it's subconscious only because mm-hmm. I've done it so many times, it becomes automatic. I no longer have to think about it. I subjugate myself automatically. Mm. And that's when the mind is the parasite. The ally yeah. is when I do the work. You can say is, my favorite quote comes from Eleanor Roosevelt, that she says this, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent.
Yes, I know that quote very well.
Yeah, I love that mm-hmm. phrase. If mm-hmm. I paraphrase that again, no one can make me feel inferior without my consent. If I mm-hmm. paraphrase it again, no one can domesticate me
without my consent. It's the moment where I become aware. I become aware of how I've used my own word. So you can say the best way to let go of conditional love is to forgive ourselves for ever saying yes to it in the first place.
Oh, great. Perfect. Let's stop. Wait, but I don't mean to. I want to stop you right here because we got to take our break. So it's a great way to take our break. So we'll come back. I know. Love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, stay tuned, guys. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Welcome back. Okay, so Don Miguel, we were talking about the parasite before the break, and you were just getting ready to talk about that ally, the ally voice in our head. So you share a little about that.
Sure. Well, as we talked before the break, the parasite is that mind that continues to domesticate us even after when our active domesticators in our life stopped. So our mind becomes the active domesticator in our life, and it does so by continuing to believe, to say yes to those conditions, to believe all that conditional love or conditioning that someone did. The work that we do, and not just in the Toltec tradition, but in many traditions, is to unlearn that, to embrace unconditional love. And like I was saying before, forgiveness, a teacher once taught me this lesson. Forgiveness is the moment you no longer wish the past was any different. You accept it and you let it go.
Yes.
To accept it simply means that I can't go back in the past and change that yes to a no or no to a yes because life no longer exists in the past. I can't make a choice. It happened. That's accepting. To let it go, my brother Jose has this image of a scorpion that decides to no longer sting itself with its own stinger, to administer him or herself that emotional poison that it means for someone else. You imagine that that scorpion stings itself every time he or she thinks of that moment, he stings himself over and over again. To let it go is the moment where I no longer hurt myself with the past. I no longer hurt myself with that emotional moment. I accept it. It happened. I'm going to move on with life. And I forgive. To me, that's the lesson. So the best way to let go of conditional love is to is to forgive ourselves for ever saying yes to it in the first place. To unlearn, to let go of that domestication. And you can say that's the work we do. It's, for me, it's the moment where we no longer use the four conditions and we use the four agreements as an instrument of transformation. And it starts like this. Just like an alcoholic or drug addict that sees what they've created, and in that moment of clarity, they make a choice to continue the cycle or not. To continue the cycle is to get the hair of the dog and take another drink and the hangover will go away. But in that moment, if you choose to go in a different direction, you can change your life forever. You see, a moment of clarity without any action is just a thought that passes in the wind. But a moment of clarity followed by action becomes a pivotal moment in our life. It's the moment where I chose to let go of that conditioning. I chose to let go of that domestication, and the best way to do it is forgive myself. Conditional love only sees what it wants to see. Unconditional love is the willingness to see the whole of life and who I am, for what I am, to see life as is. That's the difference between conditional and unconditional love. I love myself as I accept myself as a whole. This is me. There's a story that my brother Jose taught it for me first, then I heard the Cherokee version, so I'll use the Cherokee version. A grandfather took his grandson to learn the family tradition, the oral tradition. So they start a fire pit, and he tells the young grandson the stories. One of those stories is, inside of us there live two wolves, one a wolf of hate and anger, the other one a wolf of love and compassion. The grandson sits there and thinks about it, and he says, "Grandfather, if I make them fight, which one will win?" He said, "The one you feed." Now, when I first heard this story, I thought, well, of course you feed the wolf of love and compassion. That's what love is. You know, you want that. But then I understood what unconditional love is. The unconditional love is the willingness to see the whole of who I am, the whole of the yin-yang, the whole of the shadow self and the, that image of, you know, and is accept that I am both wolves. So I've changed my answer. I am both the wolf of love and compassion just as much as I'm the wolf of hate and prejudice. I am both wolves. Both are me. And I'm going to feed both. The difference is that I'm not going to make them fight. The war ends with me. I accept this is who I am. I'm the sum of every decision, every choice that's brought me to this moment in time. But at the same time, I'm the youngest I will ever be. How do I want to live my life? How do I want to engage it? It's basically saying, this is me, the person that I see in the mirror, the person that I feel at this very moment is who I really am. This is me, flaws and all. This is me.
So that's you accepting yourself unconditionally and learning to love yourself unconditionally, even the shadow sides of yourself, even the sides of yourself that, that makes
a lot
of sense.
It's like me saying this. Hello, my name is Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., and I do take things personal. I do make assumptions. Sometimes I'm not impeccable with the word, and sometimes I don't do my best. Just ask my wife. She's my witness. It is the moment where I stop pretending to be something I am not, and I accept myself for who I am. And
I love that you said that. Yeah. I love that you said that, because a lot of us that are, you know, are on the spiritual journey, you know, like you said in the beginning, like we want to be perfect, and perfection is not the answer. It's not being perfect. It's accepting ourselves unconditionally for who we are. And I want to mention, because we don't have a lot of time, you have another book coming out on October 19th of 2021 called The Mastery of Life. So I'm going to read that book when it comes out. So is this a continuation? This goes beyond the mastery of the self?
Yeah, it's a continuation. It basically, it's like I was describing before. It's a mastery of putting into practice what we've learned. So I'm using Teotihuacan as the frame of this inner journey, you know, where the Quetzalcoatl represents hell and our domestication, our conditional love. The body of the Avenue of the Dead represents the stages of our evolution, of learning how to let go until we reach that place in the moon where all that life is perfect. You know, here's the thing. The word perfection means something that is completely free of any flaw. That's what the word perfection means. Guess what? We define what a flaw is with our agreement. There's no such thing as a flaw out there in the universe, out there in the world. Everything is perfect because it exists. The only place where a flaw exists is in our mind. And it's only there because we said yes to it.
Right.
So everything is perfect because it exists. I am perfect because I exist. Life is the perfection. All the flaws that I create are agreed upon, and how I use them to go against me is a choice. That's basically the mind using those conditions like the parasite. The ally is basically giving myself the permission to heal from the wounds of conditional love left in my heart and my mind, so that I no longer have to use those filters to distort my perception of self and the people in my life and the world. And I get to see it for what it is just right now. This is perfection because I'm alive at the same time as everyone who's here and everything that exists. We're alive at the same time. How beautiful is that?
Right. Very beautiful. I love in the book because you get into this thing about the masks that we wear. And I thought, you know, that's really interesting because you're right. We wear different masks with different people for different reasons. And you talk about the danger is when we cling to a certain mask, and that's when we get ourselves in trouble.
Yeah, we basically domesticate ourselves with that mask. It can also be understood as an identity. My identity is a mask. You know, for example, domestication is a system of reward and punishment by which we model the behavior of an individual. That mask is the model. We create a mask, an identity, and we domesticate ourselves with it. That's the downward corruption of that beautiful thing, that beautiful symbol as identity. An identity is a symbol that honors our ancestry, where we come from, our gender, our beliefs, our preferences in life. It's a beautiful thing. It's an icebreaker that allows us to find like-minded people. But it's a slippery slope when we begin to use it as the model by which we domesticate ourselves with, otherwise known as the model by which I love myself conditionally with. And when that happens, it's completely corrupted. And I don't see myself as I am. I only see what I want to see. Just like Don Quixote. Don Quixote prefers the illusion. So he calls himself Don Quixote and he sees giants. And when the windmill stars show up, he concocts a story that allows him to continue to believe that those are giants, because if he sees giants, he's worthy of the name Don Quixote de la Mancha. But if he accepts that those are windmills, then it's the moment he accepts life as is, which means his name is Alonso Quijano, the truth. And we can't give what we do not have. In Don Quixote's story, he sees a young woman who works at the bar in the city. In the book, he never meets her, but in the movie he does, and it's Sofia Loren. He projects the image of Dulcinea onto this young woman. If she lives up to the image of Dulcinea, she's worthy of love. And if she doesn't live up to that image, she's worthy of the domestication to make you live up to that image of Sofia Loren Dulcinea. Right. But here's the thing. Whether she lives up to that image or not, he never sees who she really is. In fact, her name is Alonza. I forgot her last name, but the first name is Alonza. I know that. So to be able to see life as is to take off the mask. I take off the mask by which I domesticate myself, and I get to know myself through the experience of being me.
That's the equivalent. And we need to be aware. We need to be aware that we wear masks. A lot of people, I don't believe, are aware that they're wearing that mask and they're leading with that mask. They're so attached to it.
Yep. I agree with that. That's why there are different levels of attachment to that mask. The attachment to knowledge. You know, at level three, in the levels of attachment in my first book, level one is the authentic self. Imagine a lotus flower that's completely open, called awareness, and that can engage and disengage in whichever direction I want to go. That's level two, preference. And attachment is something healthy. What makes it unhealthy is that when the time comes to detach, to let go, we can't. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes an attachment unhealthy, when we can let go. So level two, preference, I can engage a moment and detach. At level three, identity, I engage a moment, and when the time comes to let go, I can't, because who am I without this? And this is when I attach myself to my identity. At level four, internalization, I begin to use that mask as the model by which I domesticate myself. And that flower is definitely closing. In fact, the petals are distorting everything I see, to the point where level five, fanaticism, this is who I am. I don't see the authentic self. My mask gives me the rules by which I live my life, but most importantly, tells me who to love and who to accept, who to reject, who to hurt. At that moment, I don't see a human being in front of me. I see the personification of an idea that I either agree with or disagree with. I lose sight of humanity, including my own.
That's a wonderful way to describe it, to help you understand what's happening. And, you know, you said something in the book, and it resonated with me so much, because I have always kind of felt this when I ask myself the question, why do some things happen, like these terrible things that we hear and we see, right? And you tell the story of the shaman who calls himself Smoky Mirror, and you say that he intuitively understands that the human journey is a process of the divine becoming aware of itself. And that always like rings so true to me. So why is there certain things happen in certain ways with certain things? Is it that we're all the divine becoming aware of ourselves? And sometimes everybody's journey is different, and we're all in different, you know, I don't know, levels of the journey, right?
Yeah,
some are highs. Right. So when we're seeing these horrible things, you know, it just helps me understand it. I hope I'm coming across what I'm trying to say, but it really does help me understand what happens sometimes.
No, and I understand it. That's actually what I mean. It's like the analogy I have at the beginning of the book. Imagine being the only sober person in a place where everyone, in a party where everyone else is drunk. You know, we do our own journey, and we reach a moment of clarity where I know myself not through a symbol with an identity and a definition, but I know myself through the experience of being alive, of being me. You can say that's when I become aware of me. I do the inner journey. But here's the thing. I don't live isolated in a hill or a monastery or ashram. I live in a community. I'm a member of society. So imagine being the party and the only sober person in a party where everyone else is drunk. Imagine talking to two people. The person to the left has been nursing a drink for hours, which means they sip it here and there, and they're barely tipsy. They're just holding the drink. The person to the right is opening their fourth bottle of wine, and they've already blacked out, but somehow they're functioning, and you can't tell. And actually, that's scary, because I've met some people who are like that, and it's crazy to see how they really black out, and they're still functioning. Imagine everyone in a party somewhere between those two people, and with every drink they take, their personality changes. You know, just as like when they become aware that, oh, I'm getting drunk, I'm going to stop, I'm going to drink water, their personality changes. So imagine everyone going up and down their levels of awareness, or in this case, levels of attachment. So imagine that you're in this party.
We're at the end. Don Miguel, we got to wrap it up. Can you believe it? It's been so wonderful. Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
The only thing I can just add is, thing I just want to add is that in that moment you become aware, you have a choice to give in to the temptation or stay in your discipline. And that's where the mastery of self comes in.
Perfect. Please, guys, check out Don Miguel Ruiz Jr.'s work, and you can find him. Just Google him. You'll find him everywhere. And check out his new book in October. Thank you for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave, and wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.